This is the November 21 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. It is the winter meeting season, and in the month of December, the Farm Doc team and I will be on the road. We'll start in Champaign on the 13th with the Farm Assets Conference, followed by the IFAS or Illinois Farm Economics Series on the 16th, 17th, and 18th in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb. The Farm Doc team will travel to all four of those events and make the same presentations at all of them. In Champaign, the crop scientists will join us and a few others. You can check all the details out online at willag.org and buy your tickets today. But don't wait. The tickets really are going fast this year. I'm surprised by how quickly. So get yourself registered today for either the Farm Assets Conference in Champaign or the IFAS Series in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb. Now let's have our conversation for Commodity Week today. Our panelists include Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. From Strategic Farm Marketing, Dave Chatterton is here. And we're also joined from the Andersons by Brian Stark. Let's begin with this. I was thinking about the marketplace this week, and it feels to me as if the market may very well be at an inflection point that many farmers will not like, that they have a great deal of grain left to sell, both corn and soybeans, and they're hearing not good things, particularly about the soybean market. Am I right or wrong?
I would say that's probably accurate. You know, I think the biggest topic the farmer needs to look at right now is that we've had a very quick harvest. For the most part, ended towards the end of October versus last year's crop dragging into November. Because of that, basis in many areas in East Central Illinois and West Central Indiana have rallied on corn 40 to 50 cents. The market obviously is very uncovered domestically right now, and I think a lot of us get wrapped up in the futures market, but we have to understand the opportunity that the cash grain market is giving us. If you want to stay long, there's other ways of replacing that length, but I think rewarding the market when you see such a rapid basis appreciation, specifically on the corn side, is warranted.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons. Your take on the current marketplace, Dave Chatterton.
Yeah, Todd. So I mean, I basically agree with your general premises. And to Brian's point here, I mean, as a producer, as a grain marketer, two very different fronts that you have to work on constantly to maximize each separately and together, being cash market or basis, as well as the futures market. Hit on the basis market and the cash side. Let's talk about futures real quick. And we're in a situation where just today, you know, you talked about the bean inventories, but bean contracts, the Jan spot contract barely hanging on, but March and all the forward contracts, as well as the new crop 25, making new contract lows today. And we're seeing a very divergent soy complex and the demand structure there with the situation with China and a record crop brewing in South America versus what we're seeing in corn, and how that's going to affect futures prices going forward, and what that means, particularly for corn that's in the bin that's unpriced or on commercial storage or DP that's unpriced or may need to be priced by the end of the year to avoid another charge. Very, very interesting market, and which is going to, you know, is the feed grain complex going to be able to pull that soy complex, stabilize it and allow the feed grain complex to go higher, or is the weight on the soybean complex going to pull corn lower? And it's an interesting situation, but I think for now we're stuck just a little bit, but that doesn't mean fall asleep. There's still a little bit of carry in this market and a number of markets, and something to be paying attention to.
And Kurt Kimmel of agmarket.net.
Yeah, harvest is wrapped up. Guys have put in the bin or paid minimum storage. So it's like you mentioned, there's coming down to the end of the year. What do I do when the calendar turns January 1? But what we saw here this fall, we feel there's a lot of beans have been moved. Talked to one elevator, he bought 80% of the beans that came into that elevator. So I think the fear of a larger South American crop, the fear of tariffs, shook a lot of beans loose. It's not that way everywhere. When you look at Decatur, there's a huge, huge bean line that you can drive right in if you have corn. In fact, they're paying up a little bit of a premium to shake some corn loose. But what's in front of us is unknown. As mentioned there, I think some strength in here. You got to convert some cash grain to dollars and do some cash replacements for longer term. But the outlook's just awful dim.
Well, Let's go back to something that you brought up, Dave, and I'll kind of go around the horn and start, Brian, with you as it relates to this. Will corn be able to hold strong if soybeans actually fail?
I think that is a great question. In my opinion, I think you have to turn to the wheat side of the equation too. I think it's not just the weight of beans, but what's going to happen in Russia, Ukraine, with some of this geopolitical continued heightened concern. And I think corn can, in its mind, if you look at the spreads and how DeSmarts has performed over the last 2 to 3 weeks, continuing to come in just indicates how strong the nearby demand is. When you look at a comparable carryout to last year, and by the time we were going into delivery, the DeSmarts spread had moved out to 24 cents. So corn has some potential bullish demand factors, but I think it's not just the bean complex that can potentially weigh it down. It's the direction of where this wheat market may be heading.
So is the wheat market, and I'll just stay with you for a moment, is the wheat market dependent on the escalation of the Ukraine-Russia war? And will that look more like it did at the beginning of the Ukraine-Russia war?
I think it certainly can escalate. The question is going to be, in a couple of months, will President Trump be able to de-escalate? But certainly, I don't know if you're going to see things as wild as we saw when the war started, not indicating that at all. But I certainly think that it's heightened sensitivity to what happens here over the next couple of months, especially with President Biden approving long-range missiles deep into Russia territory. I think that indicates a heightened level of concern comparable to when the war started.
Again, the question to begin with is, can corn hold if soybeans fail? Dave?
Yeah, Todd, it's going to be awful tough for them to do that, or at least maintain a rally. Can they maybe hold par here a little bit and we can see the corn bean spread widen? Yeah. And to Brian's point, I think you have to look for wheat for leadership in the feed grain complex. And to the points that you guys have talked about, geopolitics are notoriously tough to trade and predict, and anything is on the table. We saw Russia shoot, you know, intercontinental ballistic missiles at Ukraine today, something we probably never thought we would do. That's a weapon that's designed to go 1,000 miles, deliver a nuclear warhead. They're trying to prove a point. And I think while the market is prepared for the logistical challenges, we won't go probably all the way back to where we were at the beginning of the war. There certainly could be some hiccups there. When that happens and that pull comes in corn as well, I think you need to be prepared for that. Money managers have gotten themselves long a little bit of corn here, something we fundamentally didn't think would happen, but demand has been strong enough. But I think we see some challenges here ahead. If you look at corn demand, you know, the ethanol side of the complex, we've had record production or near record production in the last several weeks, but we've also now gotten these, you know, producer or plant margins down to, we'll call it break even to a slight negative. And I think you could see a slowdown in that. At the same time, we've had a very strong export market, but Mexico has bought 47 million bushels more corn this year than they did at the same time last year. They just don't have a lot left in that tank that they can pull from. China has not been a big buyer. We have a huge unknown book of corn out there that doesn't look like it's China. And the question is, will that ship? So I think there's some cracks in that armor here. And to Kurt's point, I think he said it as the outlook looks a little bit dim. I think things look a little bit defensive going forward. And unless we get that geopolitical lever pulled, the answer to the question is that I think soybeans win the day, and we tend to pull the entire complex lower.
Do you agree, or do you have a different view of whether soybeans can win the day on the fail and can corn manage to hold?
We've faced a lot of negative news, a lot of fear in the bean complex, but most definitely, you know, if beans drop 50 to a dollar from here, corn's going to be awful hard to stay above $4. And when you see that spread widen out into 25, you're going to see guys lean more towards corn versus bean acres, I think. So, yeah, the two's going to work in tandem. What the corn bean ratio goes to, I think we're fixing to find out.
As Dave mentioned, the funds have changed where they are in the marketplace, something like 1.75 billion bushels short, now 500,000 bushels long as of this week. It took a couple of months for them to do. I have asked this question before this week. Will they try to take profits before the end of the year on those 500,000 bushels?
Well, as far as taking profit, I think it's more, will the green line go below the red line or the red line go back above the green line more than anything? But yeah, them being long now, part of that function was they were short and took advantage of the hedge pressure and the selling this fall to flip it and print profit. The ag market team did look at that, and they're in the opinion they could stay long and maybe go up to maybe 150,000 long going into the first month or two, but then they look for them to flip back to the short side. Now, one other aspect we've been looking at, and I don't know clarification on it, is you've got 15 billion bushels of corn out there, and a lot of those bushels are under crop insurance. Well, you're going to have these crop insurance companies come in and hedge that position as they did like last year. Now, I have a feeling they're classified as under money managed funds too. So that's something to keep in mind, that we'll see some hedge pressure going into the next year.
Your opinion on the outside markets?
No, I agree with what Kurt said. I think ultimately the fund may continue to build some long into the first quarter as we try and get into that acreage discussion. But I think the farmer's vastly undersold. And so you could see a very orderly transition where the market continues to be range bound as we go into January, February, and March, even if the funds do continue to build along in the corn position, simply because there's so much old corn that has to be priced. We saw a little bit of that over the last couple of months when they covered their short position. The market really didn't take a big surge. So I do think that we could see them build their long just as a preparation in the next growing season, given some of the strength we're seeing now in corn demand. But ultimately, I think it's not going to influence the market in a big way on a rally.
So just to make this relatively simple, you can disagree with me if you want. Suggestion is that the commodities will be range bound, with the exception that wheat may could change all of this very quickly and easily. What's the range for corn? And I'll suggest that the trending range for soybeans is down. So what's the range for both of them?
I think from the corn perspective, I don't see much above $5. I think that's probably your top end, and could be as low as the high threes, depending on when you see a surge of some of this old crop selling. On the bean front, I think you could see us test the $9 level at some point. I don't know if we got enough power to go into the eights, but certainly with a good production in South America, it's going to be a heavy weight for beans to sustain something close to 10.
Yeah, Todd. I mean, we've seen corn here struggle and have a lot of trouble maintaining any kind of altitude above 430 in the nearby contract in the December, or just a little bit above that in the March. Could we take a run at 450, 460, 470? I think that's possible. Outside chance of $5, but I don't think I'm in that camp. And I'm certainly, as a risk manager, not going to wait for that. I'd rather sell ownership on the way up, maybe on some calls or call spreads in a cheap way and be out. So, you know, sideways there. Downside in corn probably limited to the $4 mark, I think, at this point. Beans, I'll just go on record, and, you know, it's not what people want to hear. We're going to trade in the nines. I just think that's going to happen. We knew contract lows today. The momentum is going that way. Weather in South America, I won't call it ideal, but it's pretty darn close. Ideas are pushing towards a crop there as high as 177, 178 million metric tons. It's just, there's going to be a big supply. And I think China at this particular point will not risk putting a lot of beans on the water really past the middle of December here, because they don't know what the tariff situation is going to be coming out of the U.S. So, you know, how far below nine, I guess I don't have a good quantification of that, but I think it's a heavy market at the current.
No, I agree in those numbers. Old corn up towards 450. Once the East goes off, March roll down, March get the roll down effect. So it's going to be, you got to watch those deferreds. So those deferreds stick their head up there, get on it. I would think near term in through here, this Deese corn, we'll see how the volume is next week after the options go off this Friday. But I would think 410 is fairly good support. So, 4 to 450 on old corn. Beans, old beans, 10 and a half to somewhere in the nines.
Farmers on the listening to the radio are going to say, but ethanol production has been astounding. Soybean crush has been really good domestically. Why, with that much consumption, are we at these prices?
Well, that's what's keeping this stuff from going to zero, I guess. I mean, crush is huge. Some of these newer plants coming on has got a little bit of heat cups in through here. As Dave mentioned there, ethanol margins are starting to slip for the first time in a long time. So, you know, that demand is going to be huge. We could have a cattle and feed report on Friday here. I believe that feed demand is going to be strong. Placements and there's going to be in this 104%. So we've got a strong demand base under us, and that's what's going to help keep the market basis levels firm here as we go into year end.
Well, Todd, I think the simple answer to your question is you got to look at the production and the supply side of the marketplace and look at, you know, if you're in Central Illinois and Indiana, look at your own corn yields and you just answered your question. You know, so I'm not saying we're lucky to be where we're at, but we've produced a very big crop. Beans a little bit off of maybe some of the early ideas, but certainly still a very stout number. And if you run the calculations on even adding in a little bit of export or crush or ethanol demand and you try and dress up the balance sheets a little bit, you still end up with carryout levels that are, I guess, burdensome at best and not a reason that we need to be, you know, rationing supply in any way via price. Now, what can change that? I think, first of all, it could be a geopolitical thing where grain coming out of the Black Sea is suddenly locked in or unavailable. Second, we have to look at the weather in South America and what may happen the remainder of the bean growing season and what happens with the second, you know, the Safrina corn crop starting in late January and February and what the weather for that looks like. But those are really the drivers that we're looking at. We know more or less know the supply here in the U.S. We know the demand is strong, probably can't get a lot stronger. So where do we go from here? And I think that's what you need to ask yourself as a risk manager.
With all those extra bushels that were harvested this fall, it does seem like today it is now price times yield. Get the gross income and figure out a spot that actually works for you. It's not about what you sold it for, but what you actually can manage to make out of the field in total.
That's absolutely true. You know, we have to get away from price forecasting if we want to be a true risk manager. And really, it's yield times price, and we're trying to solve for revenue. I think that's what you insure with your crop insurance policy, and that's what you have to leverage now that you know what that yield is. I know it's hard because the human nature is I sell, it's going to go higher, you know, but I think you have to look at an averaging perspective, and if it works for you and generates a return, you got to take advantage of it.
How do you talk producers through that?
I think simple as that. I think you have to be comfortable and know your production costs. You'd be surprised that many farmers that we talk to don't know those precisely. And it's always good to sit down and talk through it, because once they can see the return on their invested capital, then it makes it a much easier decision to price when maybe the market isn't at a level that they wanted to sell to begin with.
You work with them all the time.
Yeah. That's huge right there. But what we found is guys are probably a little bit more receptive to stay flexible in your marketing plan. It's hard to pull the trigger on cash grain before you get it in the bin, I know. So through the growing season, we try to use price floors. That way you still have some upside potential. This fall, we moved quite a bit of cash grain and replaced it with some re-ownership, covered re-ownership in case something blows up in the Southern Hemisphere. We have weather problems next summer. So I think the key is, as Brian hit there, is to know where you're at, but stay flexible in your marketing.
I do want to ask you just a bit about crop insurance. Farmers are probably being notified at this point whether they might get a payment. It's actually possible, I suppose, in some places. How should they view that?
Well, again, I think that goes back to your yield versus price situation. You have a crop insurance policy that has a yield guarantee and a revenue guarantee in the spring, and you carry that forward to the fall on where you've hit. If you look at, in our particular area, I'll call it Central Illinois, Central Indiana, very few corn policies are hitting unless it's, you know, a very unique situation. Beans, much more likely to see some claims, which is a little bit unusual. Normally, we don't see a lot of claims in beans, but because of the revenue drop, and folks with, especially folks who carried a high level of base insurance, so 85% RP, but particularly those who upped it through an ECO product, an ECO offset product, some type of a private, you know, boost or band or whatever the case might be, there have been some claims out there, Todd. And I mean, when you spread out beyond Central Illinois and Indiana, that I think gets to be an even bigger pool.
So something for producers to check on to make sure that they know whether there's income coming in.
Yeah, definitely check with your agent. I mean, once you know your yield, you have your production, it's pretty easy to figure out what those trigger numbers are going to be, whether it's revenue or yield, and you work your way from that. In addition to that, there's a transition underway in Washington because of the election year and because of the Trump victory. But There's also talk even before that. There are four different, I think, you know, ad hoc or additional disaster payment plans being talked about in Washington right now. We have a lame duck session of Congress underway, and I'm not sure exactly what comes out of that, but it seems very clear that Congress wants to put some money on the table. Can I tell you exactly what that's going to be or when that's going to be? I don't want to step on that limb, but, you know, we have some speculation going. But we've had folks in Washington as recently as this week, and there's the Farm Act. There's talk of an ERP. There's talk of upping a top off for crop insurance going back into the 22, 23, and 24 crop years. So there's a number of things on the table. You can't market around those, and you can't count on those. But I do think that, you know, at the end of the day, don't, you know, if you're downtrodden, I think there is some help on the way in regard to where we're at. One other thing that we didn't touch on, Todd, and just to kind of transition that talk, also be, you know, we're talking about marketing and risk. Be aware of the new crop. I mean, Kurt hit on it. I know people don't want to look that far ahead, but we're within earshot of 450 corn futures, not as attractive on beans, but if we get to 950, 960, 970, perhaps $10, I think it really behooves you to take a look at what that means. And you know, we're not going to have the crop insurance guarantee this spring that we had last spring, so that makes marketing even more important.
Well, thank you very much. I was just about to make that transition. You maybe should guide the show. I do appreciate that, though. So let's do talk about next year. What should producers be thinking at this point? It's now time, really, to start considering what next year looks like.
Yeah, I think a lot of producers are already starting to lock in, or they've prepaid their fertilizer. They have a general idea of their seed costs. So now you can start to forecast, you know, what trend yields for them and their operation look like. And I like Kurt's approach. I mean, we're a big proponent when you go out to forward contract of not price fixing, but being price flexible, you know, some sort of a floor only strategy or a floor ceiling strategy, you know, buy a put, sell a call, create a fence. I think that is very appropriate. And I think creating a floor, if you get an opportunity in the 450 area on corn with some upside, is a great strategy considered on the first 15, 20, 25% of expected production.
Yeah, it's a matter of pushing numbers, but the ag market team's been eyeing this 450 and D's 25 corn. We're not there now on the Nove 20 buy beans, 10 and a half. Those are realistic levels maybe to get back up to. If you're brave and want a little risk and want to prove the market wrong, go out there and sell some December 25 $5 corn calls and some November $11 bean calls for 25. You'll have margin calls, but the only way you'll have those margin calls is if the market goes there. So if you just sell one contract, 5,000 bushel, man, your other 500,000 bushels are going to be good.
So let's talk about what producers should be watching. I mean, we've mentioned some things. Wheat, for instance, Ukraine-Russia war, potential tariffs from the Trump administration, 60% on China, 10 to 20% on the rest of the world. How do they need to consider those, and what other things are on your list at this point?
I think those pretty much cover it. I think, you know, back to my point here a minute ago, I think you have to be flexible with your marketing strategies. So when you know your number, I don't like the fact of price fixing in this type of environment where there's so many outside influences can change the direction. You know, there's a reason we call it a black swan, you know, because you can't foresee it happening. So we have to be nimble. We have to be flexible with our decisions, but that doesn't mean do nothing and sit on our hands. So there's certainly strategies out there that make sense for each grower, and you need to talk to your risk manager to employ those.
Yeah, Todd, I think we've done a good job of talking about the fundamental, you know, supply and demand, you know, things in the marketplace that could affect it. The tough one for me is the geopolitical element and what may happen. We, you know, the Black Sea is one issue with that, but let's go back to China and the tariff situation, or even Mexico and the tariff situation. And we could see a tariff, but we could also see, you know, an MFP program or whatever, phase one type of an agreement, excuse me, where, hey, it could be some kind of a win where, in order to acquiesce on those tariffs, we get an agreement that says China will buy so much U.S. product, whether that's beans, whether that's corn, whatever. Those are things that we really can't account for. So I've been the one that's been a little bit more bearish maybe so far today, and I'll stick by that. But I'll do that with the idea of, as these two have said, leave some flexibility out there. If you don't know how to use options, give one of us a call. We can walk you through that. But very good way for a fixed amount of money and a fixed amount of risk to keep an oar in the water as to what may or may not happen later in the growing season.
Well, you got to pay attention, but I think you got to put your blinders on because you're going to see one bullish news item, you're going to see a bearish news item, and you're going to be drinking Pepto-Bismol every night because this emotion indicator is going to go up and down, and you're going to get caught selling on the low and buying it back on the high. So I think what Brian Day said both, they're dead on. You got to have some type of consistency here and not get too involved in the news from day to day.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Kurt Kimmel, as a final word, what do you tell a producer today about marketing the crop that they have left, especially if they're way behind on selling corn and or soybeans?
Well, the main thing is have some price targets to shoot for sitting there so if they get tripped. Most are going to wait till minimum store or till another in charge comes, minimum storage is over with, make a decision or bills come. There's some tools you can use to move the cash grain, get your bills paid, and still have a little bit of re-ownership. And the other thing, too, is to think about is we're starting to pick up some news that this organic wheat's not working. Some of these GMO beans aren't working price-wise. So you could see some of that grain come back into the traditional marketing channels.
I want to target with you the ECO, SCO crop insurance for 2025. You probably have thought about that. The Farm Doc team has looked at it. It appears that buying up may be a useful strategy. Do you find that is the case? And should producers begin to put that in the back of their mind for the 25 growing season?
100% they should be looking at that. There's been a number of changes to the way that things work. The biggest change is the subsidy level on ECO went from 46% to 65%. That lowers that product, which is somewhere between an 86 to a 95% coverage level for a central Illinois or Indiana producer in corn by probably $12 an acre. It makes it very affordable to, much more affordable, I'll say, to buy up your coverage or have a higher coverage level. And we're fighting for every dollar that we can in terms of knowing your costs and generating a profit. And I put it in terms of P&L per acre is always what I'm trying to focus on. You need to be able to, you know, in a defensive marketing environment, which is what I think we're in, you need to be able to grab every lever and every security blanket that you can. And being able to, if we can get that corn near 450 and we can have you buy that up with your crop insurance and get to a 90 or 95% coverage level, you have a much better chance of sleeping better at night and avoiding that Pepto-Bismol that Kurt was talking about. And in our situation, take that 450, Todd, times, I don't know, 235 or 240 bushel corn, you're talking right at $1,000 an acre of gross revenue with a basis included. So it's just some things to think about.
And Brian Stark, for you, I'd like you to think about basis in a different way, but basis, not the one he was thinking about, but basis as it relates to the cash basis and how wheat on the open marketplace in the United States is a domestic market most of the time, and then some of the time an export market. What might that mean for soybeans and how producers need to consider when we have a strong cash basis at this time of year or other times related to a second crop on the world marketplace that gets into the global economy more often than ours does?
I think from a basis perspective, I think producers need to look at it as the seasonality of strength. You know, we get wrapped up in putting grain in the bin, specifically when you talk about basis to wheat and basis to beans. I think it all comes back to when you have an opportunity to take advantage of strength. We need to be able to execute on that, whether it's old or new crop, specifically old, kind of what I talked at the top of the hour. Right now, the market is clamoring for basis movement by paying through a 50-cent rally over the last couple of weeks. And most growers are looking at themselves saying, well, I just got done with harvest. I've got other things to do. But when we all know when we get to January, February, March, you're going to see the cash flow needs start to occur before spring and you get the bearish tone to basis. So I think that's what the market signals we have to take advantage of, even if it's not convenient, because that's one component that we have to manage in addition to the future side. It's not just that. There's different ways of staying long through a basis contract or through selling the cash and reowning it with with a call spread. So I think the producer himself has to understand right now the market is paying for you. They're eliminating the carry. The carry is being pulled out, to Kurt's point earlier, in a carry market, in a bearish tone market, the front month tends to drag the others down with it. You give up that carry. So I think producers need to focus on basis strength, even when it may not be convenient to move cash grain.
In a domestic market, a strong basis does not necessarily reflect a larger futures market on the global world stage, because it may be lower.
That is correct. I think it goes hand in hand. It, just like right now, just because we've got strength in basis, strength in spreads does not indicate a global shortage, so to speak. It's all about timeliness and the times that the market needs that grain to move.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to our program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Brian Stark, Dave Chatterton, and Kurt Kimmel. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.